Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, Chris Martinson. And you know, in order to know where you're going, you kind of have to know how you got there. And you have to know where you are. And here we are 6 years after the cracking of the housing bubble, the collapse of Lehman Brothers, trillions of dollars of official intervention. And in order to understand where we're going, I truly believe we have to understand what it was that took us to that space. And I don't think we have anybody better to tell us about the Fed in that regard. Today, we're welcoming Jim Bruce to the program. Jim is the writer, the director, and producer of the documentary Money for Nothing, Inside the Federal Reserve. That was just a really, really well done movie. I just finished watching it. It's fantastic. Excellent production value. Really nice narrative on it. The film is looking at the actions of the U.S. Central Bank, arguably, you know, the most influential institution in the world today, but with a critical eye and revealing that many of those involved with running the Fed over the past few decades have actually very little idea how it's going to get out of the box its excessive liquidity measures have put it in. So I'm happy to see films like this emerge, which attempt to engage mainstream audiences in a dialogue about central banking, something they might not otherwise do. And in a world now largely directed by central banking monetary policy, we need that discussion. We really need that discussion to enter the national dialogue and fast. So, Jim, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
What were your reasons for creating this movie?
I was driven personally. Documentaries are always sort of that way. I mean, my background is working in the film business, but this was my first as a director. And I've worked on documentaries before, I know. Really, it's a challenging business model, so you have to really care. And I was someone, from reading some of the people who are in the film, some of the economists who are warning about imbalances in the early to mid 2000s. I was someone who was able to sort of see it coming, protect myself. I wrote a newsletter to other people, friends and family in 2006 and 7 and 8, saying, watch out, sell your stocks, sell your house if you can't afford your mortgage payment, that kind of thing. Not too many people listened, but I was able to sort of double my investment portfolio during the crisis. And in the wake of the crisis, felt like the Fed, all the Fed's solutions were just more of the same policies that created it in the first place. So I wanted to sort of tell that story of how we got here. Like you were describing, I think the Fed was, the key player in all that. But the bigger thing was also, as someone who had, I protected myself against was the collapse of the financial system by having puts, literally, on a lot of leveraged financial stocks. Looking at the landscape in 2009 and 10, I felt like, well, how do you protect yourself if the next, one of the themes of the film is that each crisis is leading, the solutions to, the tech bubble led to the housing bubble, the solutions, quote-unquote, to the housing bubble are leading to this sort of government debt bubble, QE bubble, whatever you want to call it, that we're in right now. And each time we lead to a bigger crisis. And, one of the main motivations for me in making the film was this sense that there isn't an easy way to protect yourself against, a loss of credibility in the government of the nation you're living in, or a loss of credibility in the currency. These are things that have sort of social impacts that are very hard to get away from. You can't just buy a put for that, or you have to worry about who your counterparty is if you do. Mm-hmm. So I felt like, I've got two little kids, and I felt like, I wanted to tell the story. I wanted to get people talking about the Fed, thinking about the Fed, in our country, and hopefully reevaluating, its policies and what we're asking the Fed to do.
Well, we have remarkably similar stories and backgrounds. It's around the same time I got very concerned with what I saw. I also wrote a bunch of financial stocks down in the initial downdraft through 2007, 2008. And I got to tell you, part of my, I had two sort of vexations that happened to me. The first was that I couldn't really get people to listen to me. Most of my friends and family, it was very hard sell to convince them that something was about to change. And the second thing was that I know that there were people like yourself and many others, but just a handful, who really saw this coming. And in the postmortem, the Fed got to dominate the airwaves and say, oh, nobody could have seen this coming. You know, this was just impossible to spot. But it wasn't, was it?
No, not at all. I mean, and that's, to me, it's such a shame that, I mean, I think Greenspan is sort of a master at spin. And he amazingly has, I mean, he hasn't really protected his legacy. I think it's been hugely damaged. But that idea, that sort of groupthink idea that, you know, nobody saw it coming, or Greenspan, I think, is even quoted as saying, you know, he knows of like three or four people or something like that who saw it coming, and they're really smart. You know, that was his sort of take. To me, it's just so invalid. And that's, you know, really, that was one of our motivations in the film, is to show, you know, we have, I don't know how many, but, you know, 9 or 10 interview subjects who were on the record, you know, senior people like Raghu Rajan, who's the chief economist at the IMF. And he presented a paper at Greenspan's last Jackson Hole symposium, basically questioning whether the financial system was stable or not. And, you know, it was called a Luddite by Larry Summers, you know, and so that's part of our story, is the idea that you could see this coming. The housing bubble was the logical response in some ways by the American public and by the financial system to the incentives the Fed presented them. And so, you know, we really try to point it out as not something that came, you know, from out of the blue. And then I think the same applies, you know, if you then think, well, the Fed is having these impacts, you know, hopefully we can question what the Fed's doing right now and say, what are the impacts of today's policies?
Yeah, and I really want to get to that part, because I think what your film does lays out beautifully that the Fed is just a bunch of people, and they have institutional sclerosis and biases and blinkers on. And so before we get into that arc of the movie, though, because I think it's just fantastic, can you elaborate on your position today on the Federal Reserve? You know, what you knew before, what you learned in the filming, its actions, its impact on the world, the role of central banking in general. Where do you stand on the subject?
Well, you know, my take is that, and we sort of trace this in the film, you know, the Fed, we don't literally get into this too much, but when the Fed was first created, we were on the gold standard. It wasn't even conceived of when the Fed was created that it would have to manage the value of money, because it was thought that we'd always be on the gold standard. So there wasn't even, so the Fed's role, we don't touch on that specifically, but we do touch on the expansion of the Fed's role. And so the Fed's role has just grown and grown over time. And to me, it's symbolic of how we're not addressing the real issues that our country faces. And one of the big crutches we're using is the Fed. So, you know, globalization has made the world a more competitive place for the last 30 years. And the Fed's response has been to lower interest rates and encourage consumption, even as, you know, American households, many of them, you know, they're not making what they used to make. And the idea is, well, let's use credit to keep buying the same amounts of things that we used to buy. And the whole thing is unsustainable. And that, you know, it's something that's step by step, you know, as crises came up, we'd sort of trace the 87 crash, you know, long-term capital in 1998, the tech bubble collapse in 2000, now this most recent collapse. You know, with each crisis, the Fed has expanded its actions, you could argue with diminishing returns, but they're really playing a bigger and bigger role in all of our markets and in our economy. And if you look at right now, you could sort of say the Fed today is trying to be, you know, Atlas with, you know, they've got the government bond market, the largest in the world, you know, on their shoulders, trying to fix prices there. They've got the U.S. stock market, you know, they're the biggest player there, the biggest influence at least. And then if you look at the housing market with, you know, they're buying $400 or $500 billion of mortgages each year, they're by far and away the biggest influence there. So the Fed really is directly involved and explicitly involved now in all of our major markets. And we sort of, you know, I mean, the goal of the film is to lay that out for people to look at that and say, geez, you know, maybe this isn't such a good idea.
Well, it's an interesting arc when you look at it, because, you know, you mentioned in 1913 when the Fed is formed, They were not really supposed to manage anything but gold and the money supply around gold. And now they're not only managing the price of money itself, but they're managing its quantity, and they're managing stock markets and bond markets. They think they're responsible for inflation, unemployment, even fiscal policy at this point. You could argue they're, you know, now that they're monetizing well over half of the running deficit. So we get into all of that craziness right there. And one of the things that pops out clearly that I think you just did a fantastic job of laying out is how the Fed kind of lurched from a smallish sort of an accident, you know, which was the stock market crash of 87. I'm sort of going to pin some stuff there, right? And then you get this Greenspan put. We get this more than doubling of the financialization of our economy under his watch. But we go from there. 94, there was a smallish corporate bond market accident, which Greenspan met with a sweeps program, which enabled him to just explode out bank reserves. And then you get 98 and LTCM, and that's even bigger. Then you get 2000, that's even bigger. The housing bust is even bigger. When I look at that trajectory, I see both the amplitude and frequency increasing. That's what I took away from the film. So,
I mean, our tagline on our poster is the first film about the next crisis, you know. One of those things, I felt like I kind of, and I'm sure you probably could have, and some of the people we're both reading probably could have sort of made a movie about the housing bubble in 2005 or 6. And, you know, people might not have gone to see it because they're too busy sort of embracing and participating in the housing bubble. But I feel like the goal of this film is, you know, we haven't yet, you know, the U.S. government, you know, hasn't lost its, you know, all its credibility yet, or the dollar hasn't lost all its credibility yet. So we still have this sort of bigger crisis we're on the path towards out there. And the goal is to, yeah, is to talk about the trajectory, to try to, you know, to try to see if we might reverse course, or at least give it the best shot. That's my hope.
Well, how did you decide whom to interview for this film?
You know, it was interesting to some degree. There were a few people I tried to get to and didn't. I mostly got to the people that I wanted to. I was trying to, in our website, sort of list people in different groups. I was trying to take, for one thing, I really wanted to have Federal Reserve officials in the film, because I knew at the time, I learned more as I did the film, that there were some who were actually critical of Fed policy, you know, and that's, I think, something that's surprising to people, is seeing a film in which, you know, Charles Plosser of the Philadelphia Fed, you know, talks about how printing money, you know, is a cure that may be worse than the disease we're trying to deal with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a number of the regional bank presidents in the film, you know, are very open, have been voting against recent policies. Paul Volcker's in the film, you know, talking about how, you know, the Fed's low interest rates led to a boom and a bust. You know, it's just that simple, the way he puts it. So I felt like we needed to have the voice of Federal Reserve officials, because I wanted the film to have credibility in circles where people think the Fed's done a good job. And, you know, it's a surprising thing. I kind of had a more critical perspective myself, but, you know, when we were doing man on the street interviews, asking people about the Fed, a lot of people had, you know, great things to say about Ben Bernanke. And they'd say Alan Greenspan, he kind of screwed up, but Ben Bernanke, you know, saved the day. And this was sort of a common perception that surprised me. I thought people might have been more cynical like I was. And we felt like we needed to have Fed officials part of the story, and as much as possible to have criticism coming from Fed officials to just give it more validity than to have only outsiders. And people say, oh, those are outsiders, you know, those are people, you know, living in caves in the woods. You know, what do they know? So we felt like, you know, okay, if Paul Volcker is saying the Fed screwed up, then maybe it'll carry a little bit more weight. So we wanted to have Fed officials. We wanted to have figures from sort of academia, people, you know, historians. I mean, I chose people who I think are a lot closer to my views. There's a lot of critics from the Fed in academia who are in the film. People like Alan Meltzer, who sort of has written several huge volumes on the Fed and kind of knows more than anybody does. And financial historians, I want to get that perspective that people like Jim Grant bring. But then I also wanted to get people like Gary Schilling and John Malden and Barry Ritholtz, people who are trying to advise people on what to do with their money, people who are involved in markets. We got some traders, a guy named John Succo, who I think is pretty brilliant, and was a derivatives I think it was head of derivatives at Lehman Brothers, leading into long-term capital, and was fired because he didn't want to take the positions the firm ultimately took with long-term capital, mm-hmm. which threatened the survival of Lehman. And without really the Federal Reserve's bailout in 98, Lehman probably would have gone under. So we tried to get people who actually, Peter Atwater, who is at J.P. Morgan, people who are in the markets, people who have a kind of real-world perspective, because to me that's so much of, you know, it's almost like my ideal. Like, I wish these people were making monetary policy. Uh-huh. You know? Some of these smarter people, I think, from the Fed are people with more, you know, I think more critical views of what's going on. And then people with a sense of the history and the background, people who are some pretty brilliant economists. And then, you know, guys like Jeremy Grantham, John Malden, and people who are trying to make money in the markets and have that sort of real-world perspective. And so we try to kind of blend those different views, because my problem is the average person only hears what Ben Bernanke or Alan Greenspan, when he was chair, says. And they don't get to hear these other voices. So we really wanted to have a broad group of speakers. And I was really, you know, I was going through some people I was familiar with, some people I became familiar with as I read about the Fed, you know, really trying to get voices that were outside of the conventional wisdom in Fed circles. Because, of course, conventional wisdom at the Fed in 2005 and 6 and 7, you know, said everything was great, you know, until mm-hmm. the financial system totally collapsed and they said, oh, there's something wrong. You know, but there was no sense that any of this was coming, or that the Fed didn't have all the tools to deal with it. Janet Yellen is a sort of perfect villain in that case, because, you know, she, I forget the exact nature of the speech, but she very confidently, you know, said, you know, she was sure that the Fed, that the housing bubble wouldn't be a big problem. If it was a big problem, they had the tools to deal with it. And you know, sort of wrong on both counts. And that's my concern, is that today we have a new conventional wisdom. It's a lot of the same people. And it's that, oh, the Fed can manage an exit from QE and all these expectations they've created. And I think if history is any guide, we're going to see the Fed behind the curve, surprised by the unintended consequences of their policies, and ultimately surprised by the, you know, a big unraveling of what they had thought was a sort of, you know, well-managed recovery.
Well, it's interesting that you put it that way, because I really share that view. And I was very impressed and surprised that you not only had former but also current Fed officials who were willing to go on camera and really speak, I thought, fairly honestly about what happened there. And some of our readers who've seen the movie, they're concerned that it becomes a publicity vehicle for the Fed. It gives them a chance to say, oh, yeah, we made some mistakes, but we're good and we're a necessary institution. We'll do better in the future. Just trust us. Were you worried about having to help them carry their message out?
Not really, in the sense that I think people over, you know, and we have heard that, you know, people say, oh, there's all these people from the Fed. It must be, you know, it's the Fed financing the film or something like that. But, you know, if you look at the film, it's so critical of the Fed ultimately, yep. that you know, that there's no way, you know, Ben Bernanke wants that message out. And, you know, in terms of the criticism, I think, you know, one of the things, we say a lot of bad things about the Fed. To me, one of the little, you know, shafts of light in the story is the idea that it is an institution unlike any other I can think of, where it's a government institution that tolerates dissent at the highest levels. So, yes, there's people from the Fed criticizing current policy in our film. I mean, and they're also going out and doing that in speeches, you know, on their own sort of pretty regularly. And it hasn't been enough to overturn QE. You know, I wish it had. But I at least think that that's something, you know, we are showing that is, I think, a positive thing, that there are... I'm glad there are some different views at the Fed, and that, I mean, ultimately we come down on the side of, but the policies we're doing today are wrong, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think you could watch the film and say, oh, you know, yeah, I guess I just can't see how you could watch the film and think that it's really implying that the Fed is on top of things, you know, because I think it's an ongoing criticism. You know, it's not, the people who are saying, you know, QE is a bad idea today at the Fed, you know, they are not saying, but we have it under control. I mean, they're basically, they're regional bank presidents now who've just been warning and warning and saying this isn't going to end well. And I think we, in the film, I think we're hopefully we're doing a service to the debate by bringing those voices out. And, more people will hear them and say, oh, I didn't realize people at the Fed were reconsidering these policies, because, of course, Bernanke, sort of presents very much his side of the story when he's providing testimony.
Yeah, something I noticed clearly, you got all the great quotes, Bernanke saying subprime is likely contained and Greenspan opining that bubbles can't be seen except in retrospect and all those wonderful quotes. You gave them plenty of rope to hang themselves. I'm wondering, so one of the things I've noticed is that, you mentioned the regional presidents of the 12 branches of the Fed. They come up through the banking ecosystem, and my experience with them is that they're really steeped in the business. And then you've got the FOMC members, which is a different Fed ecosystem, appointed. Some of them coming up through banking, some not, but generally more a political animal on that side of the house than on the regional guys. Did you feel that tension did you notice that when you were, that there was sort of a schism within the Fed?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the interesting things about the Fed is that there's these two parts of it. There's regional bank presidents who are actually private appointees, they're private figures. There's the governors, of which, the chair is one, Bernanke and Yellen now, who are politically appointed by the president, and are government officials. They're technically on the public side of the Fed, which has this crazy public-private structure. And what's interesting to me is that people assume, in some circles, they say, well, the thing we should worry about the Fed is that it's private. It's as federal as Federal Express, that whole line. Mm-hmm. But strangely enough, I find, at least today, these private regional bank presidents like Tom Honig from Kansas City, Charles Plosser of Philadelphia, mm-hmm. Richard Fisher in Dallas, to me, they're the ones that I think have the long-term, the things they're calling for, the things they're worried about the long-term of all this. And that's what you would hope a public official would be. But then if you look at the public officials, they tend to be, the chairman who are trying to save the day in the short run and are creating these big problems in the long run. And you could say, you could do a sort of thought experiment and say, just because someone's a public official, does that mean they have the public's best interest at heart, And I think if you look at Congress, you say, well, obviously that's not the case. But sometimes people look at the Fed and say, well, these regional bank presidents, the problem is they're private. And I would argue, I would like to see totally different policies from what we're seeing, but I think in the debate that's happening around that table, these regional bank presidents, at least today and in recent years, have been sort of, I think, the good guys in that circle and in that debate. I think they've been trying to steer towards policies that are more geared towards thinking about the long run and not trying to, I mean, they've been opposing, QE at every stage.
Well, here's an interesting fact in my life history. My grandfather served with Paul Volcker on the New York Federal Reserve Board for a period of time. And my grandfather comes from a regional bank in upstate New York, just solid, 20% loan to value, small time regional banker kind of guy. I don't think he would even remotely recognize the landscape we're in. And one of the things that really struck me in your movie, you surfaced a fact I was not aware of, which was that the Fed had asked for and been granted sole authority for regulating the home mortgage market and then did nothing to regulate that market even remotely properly or maybe even at all. And yet in the aftermath of the 2008 crisis, they somehow walked off with even more power and more regulatory duties. If I was going to give your movie an alternate title, I might call it Rewarding Failure.
That is what is happening. It is amazing. It's totally overlooked. Greenspan and Bernanke, I think, have managed to spin it that the Fed didn't have the power to oversee these investment banks. The implication is if they'd had that power, they would have exercised it and used it wisely. Mm-hmm. In the case of Lehman or Bear Stearns and whatnot. But what we uncovered, actually, it's courtesy of Bill Black, who's a professor at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, who has a lot of very strong views on regulation and has a background in that world. And he called them out in testimony and said, you know, the Fed under HOIPA is a special act after a real estate crisis in the early 90s. You know, we had the savings and loan crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the government was saying, how can we, you know, avoid this? The Fed was deemed, you know, the S&L crisis touched both sides of the aisle, just like the housing bubble. You know, there was support on both sides for real estate booms, as there always are. And so the Fed was given the specific power to regulate any mortgage lender, and they had that power throughout the housing bubble. And the great irony is they used it, they literally, and it, the rule went into effect in 2009. They passed it in 2008, they applied it in 2009, and they said, oh, actually, if you're going to have a, you know, if you're going to give someone a mortgage, you have to verify their ability to pay. So they basically eliminated liar loans, you know, 3 years after the market had stopped making them. And this is, to me, that's the story of the Fed's, you know, regulatory and really their policy history is being just way behind the curve. And you bring up, and you know, in mentioning, was it your grandfather, you know, I think that is part of the story of the Fed is that they're used, you know, people say, oh, you know, the banking interests are evil or nefarious, but it's like, we, you know, what was great, I think, about Paul Volcker is he had actually worked at a bank. he had a background in banks. The chairman before him, Bill Martin, who has that famous line about the Fed taking the punch bowl away, had worked. He had been, I think, he'd been the head of the New York Stock Exchange, so he had a background in stock markets. And so, and people with that background, you know, are going to be better suited to sort of deal with markets and to make decisions. I think Paul Volcker's background in markets gave him the confidence to do something that the more academics on the board would say, oh, this, you know, 20% interest rates, we're going to bankrupt everybody, you know, we can't do it, you know, it's going to be the end of the world. You know, he went ahead and did it, and it was painful in the short run, it was beneficial in the long run, and I think that is part of the story today, is that if you look at Greenspan, he was an ideologue. He had a pretty bad record in working in markets, trying to forecast things. You know, even in his, you know, 20 years ago, he had some bad calls in the 70s, for example. And he was an ideologue. He was someone who was good at manipulating markets, I think, for a time, but didn't have a real world experience there. And I think that is the problem. We've migrated more and more towards the academic, the theoretical, and we've gotten away from people who literally have a practical background in this field.
Well, it's a movie about monetary policy. Obviously, a recipe for instant box office success, right? How's the film been received so far?
You know, I, for what it is, for an independent documentary, we've actually done quite well. We came out in about, I think about 13 or 14 markets in the fall, you know, with the sort of typical run you might have in a theater, you know, running for a week or two or three, depending on how we did. And we did pretty well, you know, up against, you know, it was sort of crazy process. It was my first time releasing a film. And, you know, there's times when you're in a theater with, you know, it's like Captain Phillips, Gravity, and Mike Nothing, you know, that kind of thing. So the competition was a bit much, but we, you know, but we did well in those circles, and we've since recently come out with a film on DVD. It's been doing well. So, you know, we've been selling it to television abroad, you know, slowly but surely the message is getting out. And ultimately, to me, people who see the film, it changes their point of view, and that's really what we're trying to do. And you know, to some degree, to some people who have already gotten to the point where they say, you know, we need to get rid of the Fed. The Fed, you know, they don't have an endgame strategy for what they're doing. You know, those people I think are going to enjoy the film, but they might say, oh, it doesn't go far enough. But what I've seen is people who have no background, and this is what we really wanted to do with the film. No background with the Fed, no history of thinking about this stuff, coming through and I think staying with the film and trusting the film because of who some of these opinions are coming from, and walking out of it with a lot of question marks, you know, walking out of it saying, hey, wait a second, you know, how is this all going to work out? You know, what kind of path are we on? And to me, that begins the process of kind of creating a discussion, creating a debate. We've been able to get it on a lot of college campuses lately. And I think that's, to some degree, because policymaking you know, really comes these days, especially from the academic community. You know, we're hoping to have an impact with, you know, economics majors or graduate students seeing this film and maybe thinking a little differently from their professors, or you know, rethinking some of these big issues of what role should a central bank play in an economy. I mean, I think that's the big question we ask is, this is what the Fed's been doing, you know, is this what the Fed should be doing?
Well, it's really a beautifully done movie, and it's a storyline that I thought I was completely familiar with, and I was just, I fascinated and watched it all the way through. I was prepared to feel like there was some old territory, but it was because of the quality of the production and the people you got. And most importantly, I thought, this is important to me, the way you told the story was just sort of, Sergeant Joe Friday, here are the facts. You just sort of laid it out without putting the emotional content in to help direct the viewers in a direction. I think that's more powerful for people who are coming to a subject fresh and you want to open their minds up. So I really kudos on that. And if I was going to write a blurb for it, my blurb would be, I laughed, I cried, I bought more gold.
This is what we want you to do. Have you called your congressman and told him to get rid of the dual mandate? That's maybe the fourth thing you should do.
If I have time. All right, so for folks who are listening who live in places your film won't be appearing anytime soon, well, first tell people how they can find out where your film is appearing. That would be a great place to start.
Yeah, the easy way to do it is to go to our website, moneyfornothingthemovie.org, and then we've got some listings of where we're still screening in theaters. We're actually just signing a deal with a Canadian distributor, so we'll be out in Canadian theaters in coming months. And we also have a link to buy the film on DVD, which is sort of the easiest way to do it. We also have a contact form. You know, if people would have local groups or a library or university that might be interested in a screening, we've been doing a lot of sort of grassroots screenings, and we'd love to get in touch with people that way.
Well, fantastic. And I believe you're going to be at a Wine Country conference coming up.
Yes, we'll be out, I believe it's May 1st and 2nd, at the Wine Country Conference, which is a great event for a great cause. John Hussman, I believe, hosting this year, he was one of the guys I would have loved to get in the film, but couldn't get to, but hopefully his ideas are in there.
He's a great guy, and I'll be intersecting with you at that event, so if anybody wants to catch both of us there, that would be it's a wonderful, wonderful conference. So, well, Jim, thank you so much for your time. It's a great film, and we're going to do what we can to make sure people get to see it, because people need to know the context of how we got here. So thank you for your time.
Great. Thanks so much, Chris.